So as of early-ish February, there are about 37,000 humans who are infected with the novel coronavirus or have been infected with it. And the thing I find extraordinary about outbreaks like this is that there haven't been more of them. Because if you were to try to design a system that would, or to design a way of living that would be susceptible to outbreaks, this would be it. And another way to look at this is that if you were trying to design factory farms for the use of certain bacteria, virus, certain pathogens, cities would be those factory farms. Cities are those factory farms. And lots of fresh meat for the pathogens who want to eat, just like a factory farm is plenty of fresh meat for people who want to eat factory farmed animals who have been tortured their entire lives. And so I think quite often about the conditions that this culture is creating that make it susceptible to this. And in fact, it's very interesting. The first piece that I ever had published in a major magazine was in the New York Times Magazine in maybe 95 or 96. And it was about how honeybees, the way commercial honeybees are used, are a perfect breeding ground for killing honeybee colonies all over the world. And what I talked about was that every winter, or every January, February, March, early in the year, every year, there are hundreds of thousands of bee colonies placed in almond orchards, or as they're called in California, almond ranches, to pollinate the almonds. And then when you're done, you keep them around elsewhere. But then in the summer, you take them back up to North Dakota, up to Montana, up to wherever they are for the summer. And then there are other beekeepers who take their bees down to Florida for the winter and bring them up to North Dakota for the summer. So within two seasons, if you have a pathogen in California, it will be passed hive to hive with this concentration of hives packed in and then moved all over the country very quickly. And then those bees will mingle with other bees, and then it will be taken down to Florida, and you've got the, and then they go from Florida, others go from Florida up to New York for the summer. You got the entire country covered in a year and a half, 2 years. And I wrote a very short piece about how this was, just a recipe for disaster. So what are some of the recipes for disaster that we have in terms of pandemics for humans? And one of them is you have people packed in tight, where transmission is almost guaranteed by proximity. And if you don't transmit it to one person, you're walking down the aisle at Walmart and you're going to pass somebody else 5 minutes later or 1 minute later, or there's the checker, there's the person on the bus, there are people packed in tight as sardines, and they're going to get much transmissibility. The second thing is that you have mass mobility. And as I was saying about the bees, it's even worse with humans, even more so, because you can catch a disease in China and get on a plane. You can be in Frankfurt, Germany, 12 hours later with your disease, pass it on to somebody else who in the airport who is on their way to Johannesburg. And in Johannesburg, they'll pass some of the airports on their way to New York City. You can cover the entire world in it was 2 years to really get the bee pathogens all over the country. This is 2 days, and you've got the entire world covered with that pathogen. It's extraordinary. It hasn't happened yet. So those are a couple of the obvious ways. Another way is that we all know that with the permafrost melting, there are lots of very, very old beings. I mean, this is like all the science fiction movies where, you know, the ice melts and then Godzilla comes up, or, you know, some creature comes up. So that's another one, is we have all these pathogens that are in the permafrost that were locked away where nature thought it best to keep them. And they're coming out to say hello. Same with glaciers. And then in addition, you have increased routine traffic into the remotest wildernesses where, you know, you could have some pathogen living in some remote wilderness where the only humans who live there are the humans who live there, and they don't have much contact with other peoples, and they may have become accustomed to this, or there may be localized outbreaks that kill a few people. But when you have increased incursions into those areas with people moving in, coming out, and then going to a big city where they can rub elbows with someone else who then rubs elbows with somebody else who rubs elbows with somebody else who rubs elbows with somebody else who gets on an airplane, suddenly the pathogen's been able to hitch a ride. And we also have the destruction of predators who would normally be taking out, like, a lot of these pathogens will live comfortably in some other host. I mean, viruses, for example, it ends up, I've been reading about bats lately because of, you know, the horrors of the wet markets in China. And the bats evidently have, because of their body temperature, perhaps, I'm not really sure, they can host a whole number of viruses to which won't make them sick. And I know that for some diseases, I'm going to switch subjects here away from bats and to the chronic wasting disease that's taking place among deer. But one of the solutions to that is to allow mountain lions and wolves to kill the deer, because mountain lions and wolves aren't affected by the chronic wasting disease, and they would take them out before they can transmit it to others. So decreased predation is another reason that these diseases are going. Global warming itself, you know, we all know about the spread of ticks through a lack of hard winters. It's a perfect storm. And then let's add to all this the fact that through the toxification of the total environment, through industrialized diets, through all sorts of other means, we have compromised immune systems. I don't understand why pandemics have not taken place yet.